Happy Juneteenth and welcome to your New Mexico government. I'm your host, Khalil Colonna. Today, we are taking a look at the progress made by state legislators up in the roundhouse as it's day two of the special session. Well, maybe it's day one because technical difficulties really hamstrung the session yesterday. I talk with the state senator and journalists about what has happened so far. Speaking about today, it is Juneteenth, in honor of the day slaves in the United States achieved liberation. The day has been given an increased spotlight as protests and demonstrations against racism continue in the United States and across the globe. I talk with two organizers of this weekend's Juneteenth events who are also leaders in the local demonstrations against racism. All that coming up later. Next up, we have KUNM's Hannah Colton with the news update of what we know today, Friday, June 19th, as of 5 p.m.
The head of the World Health Organization said today, quote, "The world is in a new and dangerous phase of the pandemic." NPR reports yesterday there was a new single-day high with 150,000 new confirmed cases globally. The BBC reports the U.S. continues to be a hotspot with about a quarter of the world's 8.5 million COVID cases. President Trump will hold a campaign rally tomorrow in a 19,000-seat arena in Tulsa, Oklahoma, in a county that's seen a steep uptick in new infections in the last few weeks, says USA Today. The Guardian reports top health experts in the administration warned against the massive gathering. Rally attendees have been asked to sign a waiver and assume all risks related to exposure to COVID-19. Trump downplayed the severity of the pandemic in a series of misleading remarks this week and accused mask wearers of doing it to spite him. A new peer-reviewed study by University of Iowa professors suggests government mandates requiring face coverings in 15 states and the District of Columbia likely prevented at least 230,000 COVID cases in April and May. Yesterday, California became the latest state to require face masks in public. In New Mexico today, state officials reported 112 new confirmed cases, with 22 of those in McKinley County, 17 in San Juan County, 15 in Bernalillo County, and 10 in Doña Ana County. There were 8 additional deaths, including one state prisoner in Otero County, where an outbreak has infected hundreds of inmates. The death toll in the state is now 464. For your New Mexico government, I'm Hannah Colton.
Since the murder of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police occurred a few weeks ago, there have been demonstrations and protests against systemic racism popping up all across the country and the world. On the line with me now are two of the organizers of a few of the protests here. They are with the Black Voices ABQ movement. I'd like to welcome Hosanna Scott and Kieran Freeman to the show. Welcome.
Hi.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you both very much for being on the show and everything that you're doing. So briefly, to either one of you, tell us about why you decided to spearhead the celebration for Juneteenth.
Kieran, you want me to take it away or what?
If you'd like, yeah. I mean, I think we both have a lot to say on the subject, so I'll let you go first for sure.
We've been marching and protesting and yelling and, like, you know, these are all good things, but I think we're like, okay, let's celebrate and have a little second to just be happy and not be angry or mad or grieving, but just, I think we wanted to celebrate, yes, of course, our liberation, but just have a moment of like, oh, well, you know, still Corona, but we can have some fun and just relax and unwind in a safe space for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. A large part of our reasoning for deciding to hop on with the planning and really push this is because it hasn't really happened before in Albuquerque on a large scale. Mm-hmm. In saying that, you got to recognize that that means that the Black community in Albuquerque hasn't really been celebrated as a whole. And I don't know, I feel like it's time, you know, we're obviously here, we're visible, we have influence in the community, and we're blessed to be supported by our community as well. And I don't think it's a huge ask to be able to celebrate our freedom and actively try to continuously liberate our, you know, our brothers and sisters.
Talk to me about what inspired you and influenced you two to work together to really bring this messaging to the people in the city and to gather everyone together.
I think, like, just like any other Black and brown person who sees the media, I was just literally disgusted and sick of seeing us getting killed in cold blood in the street. And I just felt like something had to be done, especially in Albuquerque, because there's such a tiny Black community that I'm like, we really need to get together. We need to show support and love and unity. And then, yeah, me and Kieran had just kind of gotten in touch through mutual friends And I think we both knew that, like, our turnouts would be pretty good. And we were just like, dude, let's just do this together. And honestly, we've been making magic ever since. Not just us, but, like, our whole group of organizers. But, like, it was definitely all meant to be.
You both are pretty young. I mean, neither one of you is older than 25, am I right?
Correct. I'll be 24 in a month.
Happy pre-birthday. You know, a lot of people, Dave Chappelle mentioned it in his 8:46 stand-up special. A lot of people have been talking about your generation being the leaders of this movement. You guys are out front. What I'm trying to say is it's been 400 years of subjugation, of racism, of oppression. Yet the true leaders and the firebrands of this movement are your generation. Talk to me about what that means to you and the type of future you wish to see.
One where we don't have to tell the same stories as being called the generation that will make progress in this fight. It's only because of the endless fights that have been going on before us. And I think, yep. I mean, I feel like the only reason that it is our generation is because we have such an infinite pool to draw from when it comes to educating ourselves.
Definitely.
Not only from people who are willing to tell us their stories, but also because we have almost all of the knowledge of man in our pockets.
It's important to note that, like, this civil rights movement is nothing new, especially to, like, you know, saying this to non-Black people, non-people of color. Like, we do have a lot of non-people of color who are allies and willing to actually protect us and put their bodies on the line. And I feel like a lot of the times in the past, you know, I mean, it still happens all the time where Black people are getting brutalized, but I just feel like, in a sense, white people have stepped up, so I give them a thumbs up for that. It's like some have, some haven't. Two-sided coin for sure.
Yeah. You know, this is also taking place across the world. What does that, how does that make you feel when you hear of places like Canada, London, you hear of Germany and Paris? How does that make you feel like this movement is global?
I think it just really means for once that there might be change. Like, it's easy to sit here and be like, yeah, we want to change everything, abolish, defund the police. It's like, these are things we want to do, but it takes time. But I feel like in other instances and cases, like, we've literally never had the whole world on our side being like, okay, racism is an issue and it needs to be addressed. I feel like, yeah, a lot of times in the past, people just, like, you know, looked the other way because it wasn't happening to them. Mm. But it's like, again, tying in that social media, you cannot ignore it.
I've been talking about this a lot, actually, but, like, this idea of, like, a perfect moment that we've been given that is so filled with, like, duress and stress for everybody on, like, a global level that we want to make it better. Everybody wants to make things better, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, with the mix of the pandemic and freaking disease that is racism that we are all inevitably affected by, you know, everybody wants to heal at this point because we're all feeling this.
You mentioned the perfect moment, and something I see with that perfect moment is that this has now seemed to encompass all areas of inequality, the LGBTQ movement, Me yep. Too, immigration rights. It yep. seems that, you know, I know you two aren't going to stop at all. What does that say?
I think the difference with our generation is that it's so inevitable that even if you are from a background where you don't have to have these conversations are not encouraged. Nobody really thinks there's good reasoning behind these things. Like, you're going to see people saying, well, you should probably educate yourself. Like, no matter what, like, people, so somewhere at some point, you will be encouraged to look into why you have a prejudice or why you have, you know, racial tendencies, or, you know, why you've been accused of being a like a person who enacts microaggressions on other people. Like, people don't know what microaggressions are. People don't know, like, what systemic racism means. People don't even know what systems are, you know?
Yeah.
Grown people don't know what systems are and what an institution means.
This young generation, I think we are just a little bit more vulnerable with how we feel and, like, our protection and love for one another than, like, you know, other generations that are just a little bit more, like, tough love. We're like, nah, like, soft love, like, come give me a hug. Mm-hmm. So I just think that we all want every part of this corrupt system to just, like, burn, like, LGBTQ rights, Black people, all that stuff. Like, I think we all just are, like, we just can't do this anymore.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for all of the efforts that you're doing. And I want to let you know personally, I'm very proud of both of you. And I know the community is as well. That's Hosanna Scott and Kieran Freeman of Black Voices ABQ. They've organized several Black Lives Matter protests across the city. And they are organizers of the Juneteenth events this weekend. Thanks again.
Thanks, Khalil.
How was your Juneteenth? What did you do to observe the day? Call up our hotline, leave a message, and we'll interview you. Call 505-218-7084 or email yournmgov@gmail.com. We're here to talk about the legislative session, and I'm on with KUNM host and reporter Nash Jones. Nash, how's it going?
You know, it's going pretty well, Khalil. How are you?
Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's tough, but that is the current state of what we're in right now.
You know it. Yeah. Well, I'm glad I'm spending some time with you right now. That makes things a little better.
It is absolutely a pleasure to be talking with you, my friend. And the special session is in full effect. Let's get some info on what's happening. So the session is closed to the public, according to a Supreme Court decision. So who's allowed in there?
Right. Yeah. So the roundhouse is closed to the public. There was some pushback on that initially. A bipartisan group of 24 legislators ended up petitioning the Supreme Court, trying to overturn that rule and allow the public to come in and be there for the session. But the Supreme Court ended up upholding that decision on Monday. So right now, only lawmakers, staffers, and the media are allowed in the building. The doors are locked at the roundhouse. I saw yesterday there was a small group of protesters outside, New Mexicans wanting to come in to the building, but they were locked out.
Okay. Yeah. How did that end up?
They weren't permitted. I mean, that's going to be the rules for the remainder of the session. I did see one legislator during the opening kind of House floor meeting say, you know, I have constituents outside. I just went out there and checked in with them. They're not being allowed to use the restroom. You know, what's going on with that? Nothing really came of that I know of. I wasn't there at the roundhouse.
Yeah.
What I saw of the protests came from other reporters who were on the ground and permitted to be in the building and folks posting things on social media.
Okay, speaking of social media, I believe the legislature made some changes to public comments. Can you tell me a little bit more detail about that?
As you can imagine, not allowing the public to access the roundhouse is creating some challenges. Those challenges started before even the session kicked off. So the day before the session kicked off, a House committee was having a meeting where they were kind of establishing the rules for the session. And they ended up taking public comment towards the end of that meeting by Zoom. And this was on speakerphone for everybody at the meeting to hear aloud. And Representative Fajardo, in the moment, called the situation chaotic. And I would say that's to say the least. The public comment, not only were none of the comments during the public comment period on topic, right? They were soliciting public feedback on the rules that were being discussed.
Mm-hmm.
But more than that, I mean, several of the comments were overtly racist, like horrifying stuff. Like two callers yelled out the N-word. I mean, just really ugly, disturbing language and thoughts were shared on this public comment. And so what came of that was the two chambers ended up changing their plans for getting public input during the committee meetings. They took different routes. So the House went forward with Zoom access. They have Zoom links on the agendas for the schedules for the meetings. And so you can log in, but they're requiring that people log in with an email so that nobody is anonymous on Zoom.
Okay.
Though on Wednesday, during that really hectic, upsetting public comment, people's names were being shared. They were being introduced by name. So it's unclear how helpful it'll be that they're requiring people to log in with an email on Zoom. But the House is also allowing folks to call in or to email comments. And it's up to the committee's chair how they want to take comment. Whether they even want to take those Zoom comments is up to the chair of that committee. The Senate, on the other hand, is only doing written comment by email.
Mm.
So I ended up asking yesterday a Senate staffer if folks without an email or without internet for that matter, which is a reality for a lot of New Mexicans, especially in rural New Mexico, I asked if they could call in a comment instead. And that staffer said no, that the Senate committee meetings are only taking public comment by email.
Did any of the representatives have statements to make against or about the racist comments that were made?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Everybody in attendance that I'm aware of that I've seen comment from basically said, like, that was awful. And we cannot allow that to happen in this body. And we need to figure out how to change up the plan because this is unacceptable.
Talk to me about some of the challenges of following and attending the session remotely. I heard that there were technical difficulties, which pretty much made yesterday null and void.
I definitely was able to get information throughout the day. You know, I was reporting on the session yesterday remotely, but it gave me a good sense of what it's like for the public who aren't permitted. You're right, as a member of the media, I would be permitted to go in person, but the vast majority of the public isn't able to go. So it kind of gave me that perspective. And even for folks who don't want to actively participate and provide comment in these sessions, people who just want to go listen, they want to keep track of what's going on, they want to read the bills, they want to know what's happening in their legislature, there's barriers for them too, for sure. Like, for instance, as I was just getting my bearings yesterday on, you know, what to expect in the first day of the session, what it was going to look like, you know, what bills were going to be talked about, which committees were going to be meeting, I was just kind of trying to figure out my plan for the day. That was next to impossible as I logged into the legislature's website. The vast majority of bills were not available before the session started, but even after they were introduced on the House and Senate floors that morning, it took over an hour for those bills to be posted online and accessible to the public. I ended up calling the Legislative Council Services saying, you know, where are the bills? I heard them get introduced. My understanding is that they should be posted online. And the staffer there was basically empathetic and just really trying her hardest to get these bills posted. But it was like, it's going to be like an hour until I'm able to get them posted. Wow. And so it was well over an hour after the House and Senate floor meetings adjourned that these bills were actually available to the public online. And you know, that's not only an issue for the public, it very much is, but Republican House leaders on the floor also expressed concern that morning about not having sufficient time to review these proposals before needing to actually discuss them in committee and make decisions on them. Each party only has two analysts, apparently, available to them to help support that work of reviewing this language and making sure that they're really wrapping their heads around what these bills say before they're making decisions on them for all of us.
I want to thank you, KUNM's Nash Jones, for giving us the reporting. I will be talking to you next week so we can have an overview of what happened at the special session.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me, Khalil. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Nash. Be well. This is UNM Government. I'm your host, Khalil A. Colonna. We're covering life during the pandemic and how what's happening affects us all differently. Tune in Wednesday through Friday at 7 p.m. here on KUNM or find every episode anywhere you get your podcasts. The legislature passed raises for educators earlier this year, but the long-fought-for boost to teachers' salaries is on the chopping block as lawmakers sort out a budget ravaged by COVID. KUNM's Hannah Colton spoke with Mary Parr Sanchez, president of the National Education Association of New Mexico.
It sounds like one of the first things state legislators are considering cutting to fill the budget hole created by the pandemic is that 4% raise that teachers and other state employees were meant to get. The governor's pushing for 2%, leading lawmakers are looking at 1%. Can you put that in context of where teacher salaries have been in New Mexico?
Teacher salaries have been on the low side, I'm not going to lie. I think the cost of living in New Mexico is relatively low, except for possibly in Santa Fe and, you know, up north. But generally, cost of living is fairly low. So it's on par, low end of what others are making nationally. The problem is we have an exodus of educators and our health insurance is going up by 8.7%. For like the last 10 years, except for last year, teachers have barely broken even. And, you know, with cost of living, they're not even breaking even. It's just, it's a train wreck. What I see happening now with the way the session is going and the way school reopening is there's pressure to open schools and there's no money to do so in a safe way. And so what are we going to do?
Are there strategies that you're coming up with to be able to reopen safely?
If we had to prioritize, it would probably be pre-K and elementary, and then try to layer in, maybe have some places, I think, where people can socially distance from one another, and there may be some tech support and good Wi-Fi and, you know, just trying to think of out-of-the-box solutions to where you could run virtual programs and in-person programs at the same time, but it's going to cost money.
Do you think state lawmakers and the governor are cognizant of these issues? Do you think they're really thinking about what it's going to take to provide that quality education this fall as they're...
No, I don't think they know. And I don't think it's because they're bad people. I think they're good people trying to do the right thing in a very difficult set of circumstances. They don't know what I know. And what I know is it's going to be a train wreck. I can't have it on my conscience. If people don't have protective gear, if they can't social distance, if you know, we don't have plans in place, I can't see myself supporting putting kids in and staff in harm's way. I just can't. But, you know, I hear them up there right now talking about their capital outlay projects, and they're standing up one at a time saying, well, you can't cut this in this area because blah, blah, blah. Well, who's doing that for Salazar Elementary School in Santa Fe or Doñana Elementary School in Las Cruces or Lynn Middle School? I haven't heard one legislator stand up and say, you can't do that to the kids in that school. It's like, no, that's up to us. And that's the people who spend every day with those kids and their parents. We're going to have to be the ones that say we can do it. Because how do you tell a five-year-old? Well, you know, I wish we had supplies for you. And I wish we had a, you know, a qualified teacher. But the oil field, the price of oil dropped. And we're in a tough spot.
Yeah. Tough times ahead. Well, thank you for your work, Mary Parr Sanchez. Thanks so much for taking the time today.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
That was KUNM's Hannah Colton speaking with Mary Parr Sanchez, president of the National Education Association of New Mexico. My next guest is an Albuquerque-based reporter who works with New Mexico Political Report. I'd like to welcome Andy Lyman to the show for the first time. Andy, thanks for being with me.
Yeah, pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So talk to me a little bit about police reform, some of the measures that you've seen, and also give me some insight into whether you think these things are going to pass intact or will they be amended?
It's almost guaranteed to be amended. The other thing to sort of remember about legislation, and I think it's pretty easily arguable that good legislation, whether it's something you agree with or not, but good, sound, crafted legislation is something that has been sort of talked about to the general public probably ad nauseum, right? Mm-hmm. I know I've watched plenty of committee meetings where I'm thinking, man, they're really picking this bill apart. But of course, you know, you got to remember that goes into law. So some of the stuff I'm looking at is there's one that would create a civil rights commission. What that sort of is getting at is this issue of qualified immunity. Qualified immunity is a federal doctrine, right? There's no state law that says, you know, this is qualified immunity. And really, when people take police to court, they have to take it to federal court. So it really does become a federal court issue. Now, there could be a possibility to create some sort of state version of the federal law of 1983 is what it's referred to. And that's the law that covers sort of the civil rights violations. We don't have a law like that. I can see no proposal to do that. They're saying, let's get this commission together. Let's look at this and let's look at qualified immunity, you know, not to deflate their effort too much. But I'm looking at it kind of thinking like, well, this commission is probably going to get together and pretty quickly decide qualified immunity is not something we can take care of at a state level. And I think that's the question that a lot of people should be asking.
Yeah.
Is does this actually make a change towards that?
Does this civil rights commission have any teeth, or is it just people getting together, making suggestions that then legislators and lawmakers can act on or not?
I mean, looking through the bill, I have it right in front of me now. It looks a lot like it's just a, you know, it gives a recommendation.
There's also potentially a measure to have mandatory body cameras for all law enforcement officers in the state. What sense of support are you getting for those?
The body camera one is definitely interesting. Listeners in the Bernalillo County area probably are aware that the Bernalillo County sheriff, Manny Gonzalez, is pretty opposed to using body cameras and this kind of thing. And so they would be required to have body cameras. I'm looking at the fiscal impact report. It looks like they're estimating to be like an extra $19,000. And I think it would come out of the Department of Public Safety. So that might be, you know, like take some of the wind out of Gonzalez's argument that it costs too much money to get cameras, right? If this is a statewide thing, it's funded statewide, we could see everybody wearing cameras. And then there's basically punishments for not doing that, some repercussions for not having that. I think that one probably is going to get the most support, because I'm sure there's plenty of departments around the state, smaller cities, counties, that they just don't have it. They just don't have those cameras. And obviously we've seen that's been a problem in many cases.
All right. I want to thank you so much for coming on to the show. Please come on to the show again so we can talk about the results of the special session and anything else you have going on. It's Andy Lyman with the NM Political Report. Thanks again, Andy.
Thank you.
Now I'm on the line with Senator Cliff Pirtle. Senator Pirtle, thanks for being with me today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So let me ask you, everything is just getting started. What debates are you expecting to happen?
With the main focus being the budget, is just debating on how we navigate through this time in our state and ensure that we have the most responsible budget that we can create at this time.
What areas are you looking to kind of cut so we can balance the budget?
Not being on finance committee, they're going to be really hashing out those issues, and we're going to be watching very close to see where we can cut and what has to be cut. And the reality of the situation is the legislature passed and the governor signed. I voted no on the budget. I thought it was an irresponsible budget with some of the forecasts that we were seeing. And unfortunately, oil crashed, and that's really why we're in the situation we're in. So a lot of the increases in spending just have to be cut. And I think they're doing it as fair as possible. From what I understand is sanding the budget, which is, you know, taking 4% or 5% or whatever from everybody.
Yeah.
So that way everybody's budget is pulled equally and evenly. And a lot of people consider that to be the most fair way to do it. But hopefully we're not just kicking the can down the road. And that's really where I want to get into the debate and say, you know, are we just kicking the can down the road until January? Do we really need to look closer at this? What kind of situation are we going to be 6-7 months down the road, especially with the current state of our economy?
Yeah, given that current state of the economy and COVID-19, you are introducing some bills that really looks to help out small businesses, a small business pandemic takings reparation act. There's also tax credits. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
So essentially the small business reparations takings act would create a streamlined way for businesses that were deprived private property and allow an easier, more streamlined way to receive the just compensation that they're going to seek either through lawsuits or other avenues. And so it would just make sure that they're not spending a bunch of their hard-earned money in lawyer fees trying to get the reparations that they deserve for closing their business to protect the public.
Yeah.
So this would just make a streamlined way, and then it would allow the reparations to be spread out over a longer period of time, so that way the state isn't having to come up with so much money up front. So I think it's a win-win for everyone, the state included, and the small businesses, to ensure that they get the just compensation that they deserve.
Okay. Tell me a little bit more about the Food Freedom Act.
So the Food Freedom Act is really just trying to address a lot of the holes that were shown in our food delivery system and how much as a state we depend on out-of-state processing plants and food delivery and everything. And so this would really just allow consumers to make the decision on if they wanted to buy bread from somebody local at a farmer's market, that it would have a disclaimer saying that was the case and allow them to make that decision if they wanted to buy local. And it also, the most important thing, it creates a state meat inspection program. And that would allow some of our private packing plants that are here in New Mexico that do small scale beef processing to then be inspected by the state. And the state would have to have a program that met or exceeded the federal program, but it would be implemented by our local NMDA.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
That was State Senator Cliff Pirtle. We've got an extra special session extravaganza show coming up for you on Monday, where we break down the weekend's legislative activities. Tune in Monday at 7 p.m. You know what time it is, y'all. It's time for resources. Find a full list of resources we talk about on each episode and opportunities to donate or help online at bit.ly/YNMGHub. Discover more about Black Voices ABQ and how you can help. They're on Instagram, Facebook, and Venmo. Just look up the handle, Black Voices ABQ. Learn more about Juneteenth, head to Juneteenth.com. It's a great website. Also, you can check out an article in the New York Times explaining what Juneteenth is and why it's even more significant today. Head to this episode's post at KUNM.org. The link will be waiting for you. We would normally have links to bills on this post online, but there have been some struggles down at the Roundhouse. If we can find them, we'll post them. And if you need a refresher on the legislature, you can hear our daily updates during the last legislative session. They're there over at KUNM.org or find them anywhere you get your podcasts. Hear us now on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays on KUNM's airwaves at 7 p.m. As always, you can find the show on KUNM.org or subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts. Your New Mexico Government is a collaboration between KUNM, New Mexico PBS, and the Santa Fe Reporter. Funding for our coverage is provided in part by the Thornburg Foundation, the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, the New Mexico Local News Fund, and KUNM listeners like you. Your New Mexico Government is executive produced by Marisa DeMarco, theme music by Pope, Yes, Yes, Y'all. It's produced by yours truly. Props to Ty Bannerman and Kaveh Movahed for helping to edit the show, and many thanks to Hannah Colton for contributing today and doing the news update. I'm Khalil Ekolona, and for everyone here at Your New Mexico Government, happy Juneteenth, thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.